the second section from chapter 7 to chapter 12, is it's like the heart of Bhagavad Gita. It's the most important section of Bhagavad Gita, and in it Lord Krishna is describing very clearly the process of devotional service and revealing himself to be the object of devotional service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a very nice section. We just read at the end of our class yesterday how the last two verses of the sixth chapter, they sum up all of the first six chapters, actually, that whole first six section, first section. That first section, chapters 1 to 6, was dealing with mainly yoga, different types of yoga, but particularly karma yoga. But in a general sense, it was reviewing the main systems of yoga presented in the Vedas. Of course, there are so many systems of yoga, and Krishna didn't discuss all of them. But the systems that he did discuss, they are the main systems of yoga. Jnana yoga, karma yoga, ashtanga yoga, and finally bhakti yoga. These four systems of yoga, they're the main systems of yoga according to the Vedic scriptures. So, to summarize and conclude that first section of chapter 1 to chapter 6, Krishna in the second to last verse, verse 46 of chapter 6, he pointed out that out of all types of people, particularly he refers to four types of people, the yogis, then the ascetics. Ascetic basically means one who may engage in Ashtanga yoga, a very renounced process, as we were reading yesterday, going up to the mountains and meditating like that. So the ascetic, the Ashtanga yogi, the empiricist, that basically refers to the jnana yogi, and the fruitive worker. Fruitive worker, that term can refer either to the karma kandiya type of person or the karma yogi, because they're both dealing in the activities of fruitive work, karma, the activity of the material body. So, anyway, Krishna is saying that a yogi is better than an ascetic, an empiricist, and a fruitive worker. Now, in the last verse, verse 47, Krishna then states that out of the different types of yogis, which yogi is the best, or which system of yoga is the best? And he makes it very clear, madgatena antaratmana, that topmost yogi has to make Krishna the goal of his yoga practice. And Shradavan Bhajate Yomam, the activities of that topmost yogi, they must involve Bhajate, which we described yesterday as not meaning simply to worship, but, as Srila Prabhupada describes at some length in the purport of this verse 47, that the term Bhaj, from which we get the word Bhajate or Bhajan, or bhakti, or bhakta, like this. This word, this root, bhaj, it actually means to dedicate one's life to serving Krishna in a mood of devotion. Not just that on Sunday you visit the temple, but then you carry on with your other activities at other times. But actually that one dedicates one's life to devotional service, to Krishna. Bhajate yomam, not someone else, not some other deity, but Krishna. So, same yuktatamo mataha. This yogi is the best yogi. Of all different types of people, the yogis are the best. And of all the yogis, the bhakti yogi is the best. or in other words, bhakti yoga is the best of all the different types of yoga. And it's actually the highest activity for human beings. So that concludes the first section of Bhagavad Gita, chapters 1 to 6. Then we go on to chapter 7. And in verse 1 is a very important verse. Kavi Chandra Maharaj mentioned this morning in class, I don't know if you caught it, that of all verses in Bhagavad Gita, in Srimad Bhagavatam, of all verses in any scripture, this particular verse, chapter 7, verse 1 of Bhagavad Gita, is the verse that Srila Prabhupada lectured on most, which definitely says something about this verse. If you look in the compilation books of Prabhupada's lectures on Bhagavad Gita, you'll see that this verse is lectured on, at least there are recordings of lectures, something like at least 20, there's actually a little bit more than 20, or maybe 23 or 24, something like that. So Prabhupada chose this verse very frequently, actually. And any of you remember which verse was the verse that Prabhupada lectured on the second most? Yes, chapter 2, verse 13. Dehi no svinyata dehe, komaram yovanam jara. That verse, there's something like 12 or 13 or 14 lectures on, something like that. So this says something, it definitely says something about this verse. So the basic idea in this verse, verse 1 of the 7th chapter, it's the first verse of this most important section of Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna here is summarizing what is this best yoga. The best yoga is bhakti yoga. So what is the nature of it? This verse is giving a brief but concise and precise statement of what is the essential nature of bhakti yoga. So we're going to ask you this as one of the questions in the test, to explain these three verses, the two last verses of chapter 6 and the first verse of chapter 7. Explain the basic philosophical points made. So this verse then, verse 1 of chapter 7, contains the essential nature, describes the essential nature of bhakti yoga. So first of all, maya sakta mana, that one's mind must be attached to Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Krishna, the term Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna. So, and conscious of Krishna means that you have to be thinking of Krishna, or your mind has to be attached to Krishna. If you're not thinking of Krishna, you're thinking of some other thing, then how can you say that you're Krishna conscious? You're obviously not. So Krishna consciousness as a term means maya sakta mana, that your mind has to be attached to Krishna. And then yogam yunjam madashraya, that one performs the activities of this type of yoga, bhakti yoga, under the shelter of Krishna. Under the shelter of Krishna, depending on Krishna and engaging wholeheartedly in the activities, which means dedicating one's whole life to performing so many activities for the pleasure of Krishna. So, what will be the effect of that? Asamshayam samagram maam. Samshaya means doubt. In material life we have so many doubts about so many things, and when we take up Krishna consciousness we also have so many doubts. But if you stick at the process and practice it in this way, then Krishna says asamshayam samagram. Samshaya means doubt, asamshaya means without doubt, and samagram means completely. So Krishna is making a very clear, very strong statement, very emphatic statement, that if you do like this, you'll become completely free of doubt. In other words, you'll be completely delivered from Maya. Doubt means Maya. You'll be completely delivered from Maya. And how do you do that? Touch Trinu. You have to hear. Krishna is telling Arjuna that you have to hear from me. So we have to hear from Krishna. Bhagavad Gita, we have to hear from Krishna's devotees. This is how you can achieve this very nice position of being fixed in Bhakti Yoga, which is the best of all systems of yoga. So that's a little introduction. Now, the first section of chapter 7 is from verse 1 to verse 3. So we've just discussed verse 1. The idea is that our minds, first of all, have to be attached to Krishna. Without your mind being attached to Krishna, there's no question of Bhakti Yoga. There's no question of Krishna consciousness. So, how? How are we going to do this? So, in verse 2, Krishna gives the basic idea. He says, now I'm going to describe to you all the knowledge you'll need in order to achieve this state. This knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. Phenomenal means, Ashi Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya describes that when Krishna uses the term phenomenal, or in Sanskrit, it's jnanam, then what he's referring to is knowledge about the material realm, but with Krishna as the background. In other words, how everything in this material world is related to Krishna. So that'll help us to become Maya Sakta Mana, get our minds attached to Krishna, because then wherever we look in the material world, we'll understand, oh yes, this is a manifestation of Krishna, or Krishna is in the background here. So that's jnanam, or phenomenal knowledge, knowledge about this world in relation to Krishna. And then numinous. Well, quite frankly, I don't even know what the word numinous means, what a dictionary sort of translation into common English would be. It's a rather obscure word. But the Sanskrit term is vijnanam, and what we understand by this term, numinous or vijnanam, at least in this context, is knowledge about Krishna himself in person. Ramanujacharya, he says that this term vijnanam means knowledge about Krishna, his form, his pastimes, his activities. So one, the phenomenal knowledge, that's knowledge of the material world with Krishna as the background, and then the numinous, or the vijnanam, that type of knowledge, means knowledge about Krishna directly. So Krishna is going to reveal all this. And if we listen nicely, if Arjuna listens very nicely, then he will achieve the state of Maya Asakta Mana, his mind being attached to Krishna, or in other words, being Krishna conscious. Verse 3, Krishna makes the point that, you know, this is very nice, but it's quite rarely achieved. It's not that everyone, it's not even that, you know, a significant percentage of the people may achieve this. It's actually very rare. When Krishna says that out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, that perfection that Krishna is talking about here is Brahman realization. Prabhupada explains that in one lecture. When Krishna here says out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, that perfection is Brahman realization, spiritual realization. And out of those people, those who have achieved that spiritual level, come to the spiritual platform, hardly one of them really knows Krishna, or hardly one of them is Krishna conscious. So it's very rare. That point comes up in this chapter. Verse 19. Any of you know what is chapter 7, verse 19? Yes, bahunam janmanamante gyanavanmam prapajate vasudeva saravamiti samahatma sudurlabha. Any of you not filled this out? Samahatma sudurlabha, such a great soul who really understands Krishna or really surrenders to Krishna is very rare. And then again in verse 26 of this chapter, any of you know chapter 7, verse 26? It's not as well known. Just a brother. Very good. Krishna says that, as the Supreme Lord, I know everything that's happened in the past, everything that's happening now in the present, everything that's going to happen in the future. I also know all the living beings, all of them. But me, no one knows. So it's rare, it's very rare that someone really comes to understand Krishna and know Krishna. Now, the second section, starting with verse 4, going from verse 4 to verse 12, Krishna gives some of this knowledge about himself, how he's the background of material existence, even a little bit about his personality. Anyone not signed themselves present? Pass it back to Dr. James. So he begins giving some of this knowledge to help us get our minds attached to him. So what does he say first of all? First of all, in verses 4 and 5, he gives a very broad description. Very broad. In verse 4, he describes how he is the background to everything material. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. You don't find anything else in the material world than these eight elements. And what are these eight elements, Krishna says? They are my separated energies. So here in one verse, he's given at least the basic principle. That wherever you look in this material world, wherever you see anything material, you know, this is my energy. So then you can relate that to Krishna. Then verse 5, he talks about everything else, everything spiritual. That besides the material elements, there's another nature which is spiritual. And it includes the jivas. He's actually referring not only really to the jivas, but actually to the entire Swarup Shakti, or the entire spiritual energy, which the whole spiritual realm is made up of, and the jivas. So here in these first two verses, Krishna has, at least in simple terms and in very broad terms, described everything in existence. The material world, the spiritual world, and the jivas. These three shaktis, internal, external, and marginal. And given us the basic idea through which we can connect these things with Krishna. And in this way, achieve maya sakta mana. In verse 6 and 7, he basically makes the same point. They're the living beings, there's the material energy, there's the spiritual energy, and I'm both the origin and dissolution. In all cases, there's no question of anything being independent of me. And verse 8, again a very strong statement, there's no truth superior to me. Everything rests on me, as pearls are strung on a thread. This example that Krishna is giving of the pearls strung on a thread is a very nice example. When you see pearls strung on a thread, they look very nice, very orderly, and very attractive looking. But you don't see the thread. Now, if you think that, oh, look, there are these pearls, and these pearls are just hanging there of their own accord, because you can't see the thread. then obviously you're not understanding how that arrangement is actually there. That arrangement is there because there's a thread. If there was no thread, then the pearls, you know, wouldn't be a nice arrangement. It'd just be a mess. So, everything, this material realm and the spiritual realm also for that matter, the very nice arrangements we see, they're only there because Krishna is there. If it wasn't for Krishna's presence, well, it wouldn't be like this at all. But we can't see Krishna. People can't see Krishna, so they think, oh, there's no Krishna. It's just matter. Matter has sort of organized itself into this material world, somehow or other, evolution and all that. So this is all because they can't see the string there in the thread. They can't see that the background to this nice arrangement is Krishna. Then, starting with verse 8 to verse 11, Krishna gives some specific examples, like specific details, of certain specific features, mainly of this material world. And they're very important features. Like, first of all, he says, I'm the taste of water. So in this material world, everything is being sustained by water. He's the light of the sun. Everything is being sustained by water, but it's also being sustained by the light of the sun. And the moon. Vegetables and eatables are being given their flavor somehow by the moon. So he's referring to, having referred to the whole material nature and also the whole spiritual nature, now he's referring to certain very important features of the material nature. I'm the taste of water. Srila Prabhupada said that every time you drink water, if you pick up on this idea, you drink water and you can think, oh yes, Krishna's the taste of water. So it'll remind you of Krishna. You see the sun, you think, oh yes, this light is Krishna, or it's coming from Krishna. So you can be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said that even, as far as the taste of water is concerned, even an alcoholic, a wino, he drinks his wine. Prabhupada said, even if he thinks that, oh yes, the taste of this wine is Krishna, then eventually he'll become Krishna conscious also. So to see how powerful it is to, if you associate everything with Krishna, understand how Krishna is the background of everything. Krishna says, I'm the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. Of all the Vedic mantras, this Om, Omkar, is the most important mantra. I'm the sound in ether. Sound is very important. I'm the ability in man. Man is like the predominant species in the universe. And Krishna is the ability in man. So these are all very important features of the material nature. I'm the original fragrance of the earth. Burijan Prabhu, I think it was, gave the example of a rose or any fragrant flower. It smells very nice. But where is the fragrance coming from? There's the seed. If you plant the seed of a rose, put it in the ground and water it, then eventually the plant comes and the flower comes and the flower smells very nice. So where did the smell come from? It didn't come from the water when you water the plant, because water has no smell. It didn't come from the seed. If you open up the seed, you'll see it doesn't smell like anything in particular. So where did the smell come from? Didn't come from nowhere. It came from the earth. So the earth is like the reservoir of all fragrances, of all smells. And Krishna, that original fragrance is Krishna. He's the heat and fire, the life of all that lives, the penances of all ascetics. The original seed of all existences, the intelligence of the intelligent. sex life which is not contrary to religious principles. So these are all very important features of life in this material world. And Krishna is here helping us to relate those to him. Then verse 12 is very interesting. In verse 12, Krishna speaks achintya bheda bheda tattva philosophy. Sometimes we think that this philosophy of achintya bheda bheda tattva, simultaneous one indifference, that this was created by Lord Chaitanya, but that's not a fact. Lord Chaitanya certainly stressed it and really put it out in the front and gave it a very prominent position. But the philosophy of achintya bheda bheda tattva is like the essential principle of Krishna conscious philosophy eternally. Everything is one with and simultaneously different from Krishna, inconceivably. Know that all states of being, of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I'm in one sense everything, but then again I'm independent. Bade, abade. Or abade, bade. Different from and not different from. I'm not under the modes. Actually, they're under me. So here he refers to the three modes. They're under him. Now, of course, we should also bear in mind that when Krishna says that I am this and I am that, it's not exactly that those particular things are Krishna in person. No, as he says here in verse 12, they are manifested by my energy. But energy is one and different from Krishna. So in one sense, you can say that Krishna's energy is Krishna. Although it's not exactly Krishna, at least in the sense of Krishna in person. But you can't say that it's simply not Krishna at all. So, Krishna says, I'm the taste and water. It doesn't mean that it's like you're actually drinking the form of Krishna. But it is Krishna's energy, and because it's inseparable from him, we can see it as being like a part of him, in one sense. Section C. The first verse, 13, explains about how conditioned souls are deluded. Krishna isn't deluded by the modes, according to verse 12, but unfortunately we are. And because we are deluded by the modes, we don't understand him as he is. That's why he has to give us all this help, to help us to become conscious of him properly. So how do we do that? Verse 14 explains very nicely. Actually, the material energy is extremely difficult to overcome. We mentioned the other day that one name of Durga is Rudrani, one who can make you cry forever. And Prabhupada also explained that Maya Devi, has no morality. She may beat you down, smash you down. She does that rather frequently. So she gives you a good boot and you get knocked over and you wonder what's going on. But then she doesn't stand back and say, oh, poor fellow, better let him stand up again. No, she immediately jumps in. She says, oh, good, I've got him down. Now I can really smash him. So Maya has no morality. And she's Rudrani. She can make you cry forever. So it's so difficult to get out of Maya. But how do you do it? Krishna says, Mam eva prapadyante. Mayam etam tarantite. You just surrender to me, then you can easily cross over this ocean of the three modes. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes a very nice point about this particular verse. Krishna is saying, Mam eva ye prapadyante. Mam prapadyante means, if you surrender to me. Eva means certainly, definitely. So Krishna is saying that if you surrender to me, then definitely you can get out of this maya. So according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, when Krishna makes this statement, he, with his point, what they sometimes call pointing finger, he points, he says, Mam eva ye prapadyante. like that, emphatically. You just surrender to me, and you'll easily cross over.